The numbers told the story. They always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Good Tuesday morning to you. It is a numbers game at VSiN, the sports betting network, VSiN.com, Game Plus, iHeartRadio, YouTube TV. However you take it, it's in. We appreciate it. It is Gil Alexander. It is Kelly Bidlin, producer number nine, so much more than a producer, live from Circa, day two.
It's beautiful.
Beautiful studio.
Beautiful sports book. Nobody was in it. Caught Gil making a bet.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe I did.
Maybe not. Maybe not. Maybe it was.
What of it? What's your point?
It's just funny to look out there. Nobody's in there. And I'm like, hey, I recognize that one guy.
I'm so excited. 24/7 sports betting at Circa. We did not quite have that at the D.
Yeah, it's great.
On the show today, Kelly has put together a banger, as they say. Zach Cohen, not only VSiN writer Zach Cohen, but the Tennis Channel's Zach Cohen, to discuss some U.S. Open with us here momentarily. John Legesa, some instant offense, talking Major League Baseball with us. Tyler Shoemaker on the WNBA. I like it. With the playoffs approaching, maybe some futures plays, maybe some game plays as well. Paul Sporer will check in with some Major League Baseball as well. I want to talk Survivor here coming up, and not just who we might play in week one, but a little bit of Survivor strategery, as you have written up here on the screen, Kelly.
That's right,
I believe that was you.
Yeah, Survivor strategery.
Yeah, so we're going to attribute to the former President Bush with strategery.
I'm pretty sure I've been trying to force that segment name on Gil for 2 years, and he's like, kind of bought in, sort of not.
Yeah. I mean, I'm Ron Burgundy, so I just read it off the screen. So we're going to talk sort of just strategy in terms of just some guardrails or just some things to keep in mind for new Survivor players. Maybe you've played it for some time and it's a good, helpful reminder on some things. So we'll get into that here momentarily. We have to start with a few things because there's a lot going on. One, U.S. Open quarterfinals begins today, both on the men's and ladies side. They play half the quarterfinals today. They play half tomorrow. We're in a great situation with a couple of our futures. We are one match away. One match, though. Anything could happen. One match away from hitting Paula Badosa at plus 550 to win her quarter. We are one match away from Carolina Muchova from winning her quarter at 10-1. The Muchova match is tomorrow against Beatriz Haddad-Maia. By the way, we split yesterday. We lost some juice in what has otherwise been a great tournament, but we hit on Muchova easy. Then we lost on Wozniacki against Haddad-Maia.
Muchova minus 275 in that match tomorrow.
Yeah, Muchova, a 10-1 play for us at minus 275 in that match. We're looking good there. I don't think she's losing that.
She looks awesome. From what I've seen so far,
she's probably. I know some people say that Sabalenka is playing the best tennis. I would say it's Muchova. And then sitting there in the corner, just quietly as Iga going, "Hey guys, I'm still here. Just want to let you know."
Yeah.
So I think we're good. That somebody asked me on Twitter forgive me that I can't remember his name. But he said, "What do I do? I parlayed Badosa and Muchova for both of their quarters." And he asked me, "What's the strategy?" Badosa plays Navarro first thing this morning. For him, I said, you should, because his was like $200 to win 13,000 or something, I believe. And I said, you know, I'm a little worried about the Badosa match today against Navarro, because Emma Navarro, if you remember earlier this year in hardcourt season, we won on her as a $4 dog against Aryna Sabalenka. You may recall that. Now she's on the cusp of the U.S. Open semifinals. I worry about that match. It's properly lined. Badosa's a slight favorite. But if you wanted to hedge back your outlay, maybe even a little more in this gentleman's case, I was like, go ahead, do it. Maybe do it for 500 or for a dime or whatever, whatever is up to him. And then if Badosa wins and you lose that bet, you can reconsider what you want to do with it tomorrow. But I don't think Muchova's losing.
Yeah, that's probably how I would approach it. Yeah. But I mean, easy situation for him. You are getting +110
you're
on
getting
Navarro.
Dogs.
Yeah, and then +200 right now on Haddad-Maia. So yeah, it's if he's a hedger, wants to go that direction, pretty easy way to do it, actually.
If you're a hedger by nature.
That's right. Hedger by nature.
I believe that was the Naughty by Nature song back in the day. So as far as today's plays are concerned, I have but one. Taylor Fritz, the American. Number one ranked American player in the world on the men's side is taking on Sasha Zverev. Sasha Zverev got to a U.S. Open final. You may remember the year where Novak Djokovic beamed the lines judge with a tennis ball, so he got disqualified. It was on Sasha Zverev, his racket to win that U.S. Open. He gacked it. Dominic Thiem won it, so he's got great history here, obviously. But Taylor Fritz's hard court numbers this year, both 6 month and 12 month, are better than that of Sasha Zverev. And quite frankly, Kelly, at VSiN.com/picks, where I put in the play last night, every host, every guest, every sport, for subscribers at VSiN.com/picks, I think the number I just was making this bet down here at Circa, it was +170 on Fritz. So I think you might be able to find a better number than I got last night at VSiN.com/picks. But Taylor Fritz is the play. That number should not be what it is. So Taylor Fritz is your one play of the day. And let's try to get both Badosa and Muhova home, which is just the greatest tournament in the world, the U.S. Open. FSU, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, that those would be great to hit. You're right on the doorstep with those. Fritz, I think I'm going to tail you on. I like that play. You think he's looked great. And then no Drew Dinsick on the show today. But man, Grigor Dimitrov, I didn't make that bet the whole time. But every time I'm watching him, he's just cruising by. Now he's got Tiafoe. That should be a great match later today, too. I can't wait to watch that one.
The only problem, and Drew would admit this, too. The only problem with that is, even though Alcaraz got bounced, even though Joker got bounced, Yannick Sinner is still there. Mm. So it's like this. Behemoth still exists, so it's tough to wrap your brain around that still getting home.
And so their winner of those matches face each other?
Well, I'm just saying next, he's in the tournament period.
So he's just around period. Got it, yeah.
I was going to get to FSU next. There's something more important than FSU. Pardon me, I know you went to FSU.
Okay, season's over. What do you got? Yeah.
Trent Williams and the Niners look like they're about to reach an agreement. Yes. Now, this is a massive development in the National Football League. Huge. Because you know, I was talking about how I have a Jets bet against the spread. I was considering a Jets bet on the money line in week one, Monday Night Football, the Jets and the Niners. This was under the presumption that the Niners and Trent Williams wouldn't be able to work it out, that they would not be able to work it out. It looks like on the heels of the Niners coming to terms with Brandon Ayuk, that it looks like they will with their standout left tackle. This is a first ballot Hall of Fame left tackle we're talking about. I thought he was going to do the Washington thing. I know the Washington issue when he was in D.C. was a medical thing. He's like, I'm never playing for you guys again. And he never did. But and I thought he'd be quite as stubborn on the money here. But no, they have made a deal. It looks like it'll get done officially by tomorrow. If that is the case, and I don't even think it needs to be the case at this point because of the news is already out.
Yeah.
This number on the Niners is only going to soar now. In my humble opinion. So it's 4 right now on the Niners, and it can only go up with this news, in my opinion. Like, I just believe that if you are going to bet the Niners, you ought to bet it right now. And if you are thinking about a Jets bet, you can kind of hang out for a while now because this is massive news. And I know
that's interesting.
We always say this about quarterback. Only quarterbacks move the line. I beg to differ. I think that this will move the lineup. It's not going to go crazy. It's not going to go to 7 or anything, but it will move up here between now and game time.
I am interested to see where this one moves to. I only say that because all we've seen is all Jets money for the past like 6 weeks, right?
Under the presumption that Ayuk and or Williams wouldn't be there.
So yeah, will there be any any pushback on the Niners side because of that? We haven't really seen it much with Ayuk. I agree with you, Trent Williams, I think matters a whole lot more. So it'll be interesting to watch where that one moves over the next, 6 days now.
Well, also, if you don't believe me, you go back in time to when it, earlier in the summer when we didn't really know that this Williams and Ayuk thing would happen, and the line was 6.
Right, right, yeah.
So, it's right there in black and white.
We'll see.
That's huge. As far as your alma mater.
Yeah.
FSU.
What about them?
Basketball season. I don't know if you know this, but they're 0-2. They lose as a double-digit favorite last night outright to BC at Bill O'Brien's debut as a head coach. Florida State gives up 263 yards on the ground. They themselves, 16 total carries for 21 yards on the ground. And DJ Ungalale, when he did have opportunities to cash in, I think the biggest sequence for him was that one at the end of the first half where he got one ball tipped up in the air, could have been picked. And then he has a wide open receiver in the corner.
Oh, my God.
And he just airmails it. And it's one of those things where the wide out like flails his body trying to get to it. And I was just like, remember there was a time where people were like, oh, the Trevor Lawrence replacement is going to be better than Trevor.
Yeah. Yeah, they've whiffed on a couple in a row there, right? It's not like Klubnik's looking all that great either up in Clemson. Yeah, that throw, Gil. I know we like to rip apart people that are on radio, on TV, when they say things as dumb as this, that I could have made that throw. But, oh, my God, Gil, what are we doing? You're a college quarterback. You got to be able to make that throw. It's an easy 6.
I thought you were going to say you could have made that throw.
I'm not going to go that far, okay. but I could have made it as well as he did. Are you kidding me?
Oh, you certainly could have done that.
That was ridiculous. I've got multiple questions, notes I wrote down during the game. Does FSU practice Like, did they practice all summer? Did they practice leading up to the game last week?
I'm fairly sure.
Did they practice in between? Do the coaches meet? That's my next question. Like, you got gashed on the running game last week, and you just gave up that many yards again to Boston College? What is going on? How did this program fall apart so much?
You may know that Kelly went to FSU, so he's a little passionate.
I mean, and if you're a Rams fan out there, apparently you should be really excited about your two draft picks from Florida State, because they were the entire defensive front, apparently.
I'm glad you brought that up, by the way. Because the one thing that I can't stand that I am seeing a smattering of is some people going back to last year and be like, you see, they shouldn't have been in the in the playoff. And I'm like, there's nothing to do with that.
Not at all. Now, there's only one thing left for me to say about it, Gil. What yes, happened last night? It's the new Florida State tagline. Who can I sue? Who can we sue? We got to sue somebody. It's ridiculous. I don't know if it's Norvell. I don't know if it's whatever airline brought him back for Ireland. Something's going wrong here. We're suing. We got to find someone to sue.
You're going to be okay. We're only like 10 minutes in.
Yeah, it's fine. It's okay. Season's over. My Saturdays are wide open now during the season.
Yes.
If you want to hang out, give me a call.
It did occur to me, like, okay, Florida State, to make the playoff, they would have to win every single game the rest of the way. It ain't happening.
I believe I heard an ESPN FBI of under 1% for them.
That would be accurate.
Yeah.
That would be accurate, yeah. Mathematically.
Good times.
Just had to give Kelly a few moments to vent. We'll come back. We'll talk baseball. I want to, obviously, the White Sox utility continues. We'll put that in historical perspective one more time. We'll talk about which of the awards market is still up in the air. It's dwindling. I would say 2 of 6. We'll talk about that momentarily. And survivor strategy. I think we need to have this discussion. That's on the other side. It's a numbers game live from Circa right here at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
The Sports Betting Network.
With college football already underway and the NFL kicking off this week, there's never been a better time to become a VSiN Pro subscriber. Make this football season your best ever with full VSiN Pro access to our daily best bets, exclusive betting splits data, top-rated betting systems, 24/7 video analysis. It's all there. Plus, our updated NFL betting guide with post-preseason updates for every team, new insight on players to watch, week one betting systems, and of course, more best bets. Grab our football season special. Get full VSiN Pro access from now through the Super Bowl for just $175, or start a monthly subscription for just $9.99 and see why VSiN Pro is your ticket to a winning season. Don't wait. Head to VSiN.com/subscribe to sign up and watch or listen to us anywhere you go. That's VSiN.com/subscribe. Gil Alexander, Kelly Bidlin, live from Circa, the mothership. Ah, they let us in once and for all. You feeling good about it?
Oh, yeah. I'm feeling great. The new graphics are looking great. Shout out to James Coleman and the whole team.
James
Love
Coleman.
The way it's looking. Yeah.
James said to me yesterday, he was like, did you notice the bottom third? I was like, I did not, but now I do.
That looks great. That looks awesome.
I'm not used to turning my head this way for it to see them. There you go. They look great. They absolutely do look great. So shout out to the crew behind the scenes and James specifically. Real quick, White Sox lost again last night, broken record. They lost by 10 runs to the Orioles. So it's just for those of us who are baseball nerds and like history, this is the worst kind of history. The White Sox now in your friendly neighborhood standings are 31-108.
Ungood.
-301 run differential, 31-108. My God. So this is an 11 game losing streak?
Yeah.
And by the way, that's adorable. Because they had a 21-game losing streak earlier this year, and I'm pretty sure had a 14 earlier as well.
Did you see the Chris Flexen note, though?
Oh, Flexen. We talked about this on the quarterly podcast.
It's incredible.
Chris Flexen, when he has started, this is the White Sox 20th straight loss.
20?
Baseball's modern era since 1900, in other words, record for most consecutive losses in a pitcher's starts, had been shared previously with Bob Groom. The Washington Nationals, Bob Groom. You remember Bob Groom, don't you?
Oh, obviously, yeah.
So this is the brand new record for Chris Flexen, who, remember, a few years ago, people were like, oh, Chris Flexen is outstanding. By the way, it doesn't mean that Chris Flexen is terrible. It's just that if you had happened to bet on him every single time, we know how the White Sox bullpen is. Not that Flexen is great, but the point is it's not all his fault, right? The White Sox famously this year had a marginally decent first five record before the bullpen gacked so much. But Chris Flexen gets that... ignominious, I believe is the word you would use, Kelly. So maybe not you, but somebody else might use.
Yeah, definitely not me. So no. Don't bet flex in first five. Just noting that for the rest of the season.
I just want to point out historically. So what do we say? What do we say they were? 31-108. Mm-hmm. That is a 223 winning percentage. And again, history, the worst winning percentage in the history of baseball. The Athletics, the Philadelphia Athletics of 1916, they had a 235 winning percentage of 36-117. And the worst 162 game record was a 248 winning percentage. That was the 62 Mets, who went 40-120-1. Apparently one game they didn't bother playing because the Mets were so bad. They were like, you don't have to make it up.
Trying to figure
so
out.
So they are on pace to break all these records.
I'm trying to figure out if I'd quit by now. Like, you know, if I was a player on the team, just be like, find me for the rest of the year. Like, I'm done. Like, that's got to be exhausting getting out there every single day.
Oh, no, you're allowed to mentally quit, but physically you probably should hang around.
You probably should. Really, right?
Real quick on the baseball awards, because we wanted to do.
Oh, yeah.
You want to just shoot them at me real quick?
Yeah, you ready for another edition of Done or Not Done Yet? Bum, 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 bum. We don't really have
it. Oh, I was expecting it to be open.
We've only done it twice, so whatever. All right, we're going to run through all the awards, and then I got a couple divisions for you.
Yes, sir.
You ready? Okay.
Yeah.
MVP. Done or not done yet?
Both done.
Both done. Okay.
Judge and Ohtani.
Cy Young. Done or not done yet?
American League done. Tarek Skubal. I've said that for a while now, even though I hold a Seth Lugo ticket. National League not quite done.
Chris Sale minus 600. Zach Wheeler plus 350.
Still alive, Tom Tango, who has hit 31 out of the last 36 Cy Young winners on his Cy Young tracker, has this super duper close between Sale and Wheeler. He has Sale with 67.5 Tango points and Zach Wheeler with 66.1. So Wheeler right now,
okay,
if you juxtapose it against the betting line, he has value. So that is still alive.
That's interesting because I feel like Tango's been a little higher on Sale all year. I mean, obviously he still is, but just doesn't match the betting.
You're just asking me what's still possible to change.
No, absolutely.
In terms of the favorite.
All right. Rookie of the year. Let's start National League. Done or not done yet?
Done. Jason Weingarten gets it home with Jackson Merrill.
Wow.
Done.
Cash that ticket, Jason. All right.
Even though I think it's going to be closer than we as bettors think it is.
I think it's going to be closer than what these odds indicate right now. Minus 1,000 on Merrill.
It's not minus 1,000. That's my
hunch. I agree with everything you said. Right now, I think he's in the lead. He's probably won it already, but it's going to be closer than what we're seeing in the odds. Yep. All right, American League Rookie of the Year. Done or not done yet?
Not done because Austin Wells plays for the Yankees. So sorry, O's fans with Colton Cowser, who is the favorite right now.
Yeah, minus 220, Austin Wells plus 150, and I feel like this escalated quickly.
Colton Cowser, 20 homers, 60 RBI, 322, 448, 770 slash. Austin Wells, 12 homers and 42 ribbies. Those aren't as good, but 343, 439, 782 slash is comparable, and he's a catcher for the New York Yankees. So there's always a shot that we have some kind of, if he goes crazy towards the end of the year, is there a bias that could take place with voters? Absolutely.
Okay. Is there a bet there at all or no?
I'm not betting it, so I'm not going to recommend it. But you're asking me what's still alive and what's not.
Right.
That's alive.
Yeah. I feel like that's one with it. With all the attention the National League Rookie of the Year's gotten, that's kind of flown under the radar a little bit with those odds.
Maybe. I think if Austin Wells plays for the, pick a team, the Oakland A's, I don't think this is a question.
Okay. That's a great way of putting it. Okay. A couple division races real quick. AL Central. Done or not done yet?
God, this turned. The Royals have lost 6 in a row, and the Guardians have won 4 in a row since the Royals took the first 3 in their 4-game set with the Guardians. Twins are in there as well. I kind of think it's done, but it's not. Technically, it's not done, obviously, but I sort of think it is because if the Royals are going to have a shot here, they got to win these next two against the Guardians. They lost yesterday. And if the Guardians can essentially split with the Royals and split their games with the Twins that they have coming up, and then they can just lollygag home. Because we're less than 4 weeks now. Mm-hmm. So it's not done, but it's kind of close to done if the Guardians can just be mediocre against these teams.
And I'm going to go to NL West next because you saw a major jump in this market. And keep in mind what Gil is talking about with you. We're running out of runway. So every one of these wins matters more. Done or not done yet as the Dodgers launch out to minus 2,500.
I have to say no, that it's not done. just because I think the Diamondbacks could catch fire here. But it's definitely teetering. There's okay. No question it's teetering.
All right, and then one last one. It's the AL East. It feels like it's been like this the whole year.
Clearly not done. These two teams just do this dance all year long. They're just next to each other.
It's been wild. Like, I mean, like, it feels like these odds have barely been, far from different from this since, 3 months ago?
Yeah, the other three are done, by the way. And that includes the Astros, who don't even have to be that good to win the AL West. Yeah, that's done. Do you want to save the Survivor talk for the other segment, or you want to do it right now? Let me squeeze in the Survivor.
This will start it, yeah.
I want to squeeze in Survivor because I think this is very important for people. First of all, as I always say, I think the game is misnamed. And what I mean by that is, and maybe we'll just stick to this point before the end of the segment. We'll get to the others after. But because the name of the game is Survivor, the average player simply goes, oh, the object is to survive. No, the object is to win. Let me just give you an example of that. And I don't mean to throw my old buddy, the Grover Cleveland of producers, Jeff Parles, under the bus for this. He was producer number 5 or 8. But I once did a sort of thought exercise with him a couple Thanksgivings ago. And you will remember that this was a Thanksgiving where the Raiders were heavy underdogs against the Dallas Cowboys. And I sort of wanted to make a point about this. Point about that it's misnamed and people, it takes people off the scent of what you're supposed to do. And I said to Jeff, I said, let's say there's 100 entries left in Survivor heading into this Raiders Cowboys game. Cowboys, again, double digit favorites. And let's say you knew that 99 people were going to take the big favorite Cowboys. Would you, Jeff Parles, the 100th entry representative, would you, knowing that information, obviously you don't know it, but you can get some sense of what the percentages are going to be. That's a point coming up later. Would you take the Raiders, knowing that all 99 others were taking the Cowboys? And his immediate response was, now keep in mind, they're double-digit favorites, so you have to put your mind to what the frame of mind was, the conventional thinking of these two teams at the time. And he goes, I can't do it, Gilly. I can't do it. And I'm like, Jeff, that is the point of what I'm talking about with that the name is poorly states what the object here is. Mm-hmm. If you knew that 99 people were going to be on the Cowboys, it is your obligation, it is your duty to put it all on the line and take the double-digit dog Raiders, even though in the moment it feels so uncomfortable to do so. But how many times in your life do you have a one-game opportunity, and you won't know this cleanly, but I was just doing the hypothetical, right, Jeff. How many times in your life, at the time I think it was like 6.7 million or something like that, will you have the opportunity to win that chunk of cash in one football game? And so that's the mindset that we are fighting against as you continue on Survivor, because you become very enamored with your entry and you just want to keep playing the game. No, at some point you got to try to win. We'll get to more Survivor talk on the other side. Zach Cohen joins us as well. US Open, it's a numbers game right here at VSiN.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Are you the type of player who's looking to get down $10,000 or more on an NFL line at the best price in the market? Or perhaps you're looking to get your in-game play instantly accepted, whatever the case. Introducing Sporttrade, the app that's going to change sports betting. Minus 104 lines instead of the typical minus 110, instant in-game betting, and a concierge player service. Sporttrade is perfect for those who want a premium betting experience. Sporttrade live in New Jersey all this time, and now Colorado as well. Iowa has been the case, and now coming to Arizona and Virginia this fall. 5 states total. Download Sporttrade, use code VSIN to earn 10% cash back on each wager in your first week. Terms apply. You got to be 21 years or older to play. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call or text 1-800-GAMBLER. The CEO of Sporttrade, Alex Kane, was kind enough to come on a numbers game about a month or two ago. I have trouble with time. Maybe it was more than that. Maybe a couple months ago. And then he was on a panel that I was honored to moderate at Bet Bash with not only the great Billy Walters, but Alex Kane was on there as well. Unbelievable service. If you are in one of those jurisdictions that has Sporttrade, absolutely take advantage. And we will hope to have Alex on the show here coming up soon once again to discuss all thing Sporttrade. I was watching Tennis Channel several days ago, I believe it was. And, you know, Tennis Channel has their main channel, and then they got these, like, sidebar things that they do where there's, like, guys watching matches live. That's not, like, real Tennis Channel. This was real Tennis Channel. And all of a sudden, up on the screen pops up VEASAN's very own Zach Cohen, and I could not have been more excited for him. You can follow him on Twitter at BettingOnX. He comes to us now courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line. Congratulations to you, Zach. That was awesome.
Thank you. I'm happy somebody was watching. I didn't know who was going to be watching because it wasn't like the official U.S. Open pre-show. It was on Tennis Channel, but it was a fun segment. Hopefully I'll get to do it again.
I was rooting for your picks to get home. Did you split them? Would that happen? Was that the case that day?
I had Mensik, who had three match points, two of them on his own racket in the fourth set. I've had some really brutal beats at this tournament so far. Last night, I was on over 3.5 in Paul Sinner. Thought for sure that was going to get home with Paul at two breaks in the first set.
This has been the year, 2024, of the tennis brutality bad beats. Like, I had, the day before, where I had Alexei Popyrin, set points on his racket, great server, gack. Like, the stage was too big with the sort of home court of Francis Tiafoe. Not really, he's from D.C., but no one has more interesting home road splits in terms of United States versus elsewhere than Francis Tiafoe. We have reached the business end of the U.S. Open, Zach, as they call it. Quarterfinals begins today, continues tomorrow. It is, the matchups are fantastic. I'm curious what you have as bets either today or perhaps tomorrow as well.
So one of my plays is Dimitrov -143 against Tiafoe, and I am afraid of going against Tiafoe in New York. He really levels up in Arthur Ashe Stadium. He loves playing with the crowd. But, you know, you're looking at the stats, Dimitrov is a much better server. He's a better returner, at least over the last 52 weeks. Beat him in straight sets at Wimbledon. I was a little nervous about Dimitrov potentially being tired coming off a five-set win over Rublev, but it's not like Tiafoe, you know, has played some straightforward matches himself. I think that both these guys will be, you know, less than 100%, but, you know, good enough to go for the full, you know, length of this match. So I went with Dimitrov. I think that he has a little too much overall game for Tiafoe. And then I was really, really tempted to double dip on Paula Badosa, who I have to win the quarter. I do think she's going to beat Emma Navarro. So if you are looking just to play that match, I like Badosa at -125. Just another one where I think that she's a much better server than Navarro is. She beat her back in Rome earlier in the year. I think that she's playing her best tennis of the season in the North American hardcourt portion of the year. And I just think that, you know, it's hard to really take much from Navarro's win over Coco Gauff. She was gifted that match with 60 unforced errors, you know, almost 20 double faults from Coco. I just think that it's going to be a lot tougher for her to beat an informed Badosa now.
I couldn't agree with you more about Dimitrov in terms of the numbers. The numbers are superior to that of Tiafoe. I stayed away just because of the intangible New York night crowd tonight. We're both on Badosa here to win the quarter. And I think that price is accurate today. And so it's just gets me a little nervous. It's going to be a tight one, but let's hope to get Paula home. Anything tomorrow?
I went with Alex de Minaur. Last round, I took him to win the quarter at -105, thinking I'd get a good price if he were to face Draper. I ended up getting a good price, maybe not one that was worth sweating out the Thompson match, but yeah, -105 as opposed to -125, -130. I do think that de Minaur is going to win that match. His first serve has kind of been a problem throughout this tournament, but I kind of think that that's as to be expected, you know, after having not played since Wimbledon, but it was getting a little bit better against Thompson. And I just kind of think that Draper, once he gets tested physically, he's going to wilt eventually. He's a guy that has had a lot of trouble with conditioning in the past. He hasn't really been tested this tournament, has won a lot of straight set matches. De Minaur, one of the most physical players on tour. I think that he's going to, you know, if he gets him to 4 or 5, he's going to outlast him.
Yeah, and you may have telegraphed my play for tomorrow because that line has come down. It was at the opener was like -147 or something on De Minaur. The Demon, clever nickname. So now a much more affordable price tomorrow against Jack Draper. Just the matches, the folks who have gotten to the quarterfinals, both men's and ladies' side. It's just an awesome tournament. Let's switch to. By the way, before we leave, so if I just ask you to right now speculate who you think is winning both the men's and the ladies' side. Where is your head right now on this?
I took Pegula before the tournament. I don't really want to change it now. She is going to have to beat Iga, and she is a pretty big underdog in that match, but I think she's going to be able to do it. So I'm going to stick with Pegula there, and I think on the men's side, I picked Zverev before the tournament. I think it'll be Medvedev Zverev in the final. So I do like Medvedev in that match against Sinner. I haven't figured out how I'm going to play it yet. I saw a +5.5 out there. So that is another one I should have mentioned. But I think it'll be a Medvedev Zverev final. I'll stick with Zverev again because I did take him before the tournament. Haven't seen enough that I'd want to change it.
I like you're one of those guys who's like, well, I picked him before the tournament. No reason to change it now. Yep. Okay. Let's get to, and again, the decency of tennis to get out of the way before the NFL season week one actually starts, or it ends the same day that the first Sunday occurs in the NFL. College football, you have a week two college football play?
Yeah, I have one play, and I kind of think it's the buyback spot that people think Florida State was this week. I like Oregon -19.5. against Boise State. That's one that has gone through a couple of key numbers, opened at -24.5, now down to -19.5. I'm not too concerned with what we saw against Idaho. It was obviously a really ugly performance from Oregon, but I do think that they're going to be up for this challenge. I think the defense is capable of stopping Jenty in that running game at Boise State. Don't think the quarterback play for the Broncos is going to be good enough in this one. I just kind of think that the Oregon offense was moving the ball a lot against Idaho. They just were not cashing in. Like I was running, you know, I wrote a Heisman Trophy story and, you know, I kind of did a stock up, stock down type of thing. And Dylan Gabriel still put up massive numbers. They just were not scoring touchdowns. I think that will change against Boise State. It's a much bigger game. I don't think the Ducks are going to sleep through this one.
Anything else from that Heisman piece that you wrote that you wanted to share with us?
I still think that the Miller Moss price is a little too good. It's down to 22-1 now, but I like that before, you know, 40-1, it got down to 33-1 before the season. Obviously that was a huge performance. I think that LSU defense is pretty good. I think both defenses in that game were really impressive considering the new defensive coordinators that they brought in. So I think that was one of the tougher matchups that Moss is going to face. And I do think if he has a pretty big game at Michigan in a couple of weeks, that's going to really change the conversation for him moving forward.
All right, Zach, not only betting on X, not only on the Tennis Channel, but writes in volume, multiple sports at VSiN.com. Check out all his work there. I know you're going to, I think you're joining us on Thursday again, so we'll have time to chat before Thursday Night Football between the Chiefs and the Ravens. But give us a preview of your thoughts, where your head is at on the opener for the 2024 season.
Yeah, so I really like the Chiefs -2.5 if you can find it, or you can, you know, pay up to take it. I think that the Chiefs are just as good defensively as they were last season, towards the end of last season when, you know, they became an elite defensive team and, you know, a ball control team on offense. I think that same team is going to show up this year, but I do think that there's going to be a little bit more explosiveness on offense, you know, with Xavier Worthy now in the mix. I don't think he's going to put up, you know, massive numbers as a rookie, but a speed guy like that that runs a 4-2-1 is definitely going to, you know, open things up for that Kansas City offense. And I also think the Ravens moving to a new defensive coordinator, losing Clowney, losing Queen, that defense is going to have some, you know, question marks heading into week one. So I think that that's a good spot for Kansas City. I also really like Travis Kelce over 56.5 yards. That's a number that he went over in 9 of the 15 regular season games he played last year, went over it in all 4 of their playoff games, and went way over it when they beat the Ravens in Baltimore in the playoffs. So I thought that number was way too low, you know, even if you're a little skeptical on Kelce heading into the year, because he is obviously getting much older.
You know what I worry about here? I'm not disagreeing with anything you've said. I'm worried that I haven't heard one person be on the Ravens. Not one. This troubles me.
I saw on the picks page this morning, like 9 guys put in their Chiefs pick. I'm like, oh, yeah, we're talking to lose this one.
You're toast. Everyone's toast. Last thing, 30 seconds. Trent Williams of the Niners, pardon me, look like they are headed towards a deal. Do you agree with me that this Niners line against the Jets is just going to go up from here?
Yes, I think it's going to go up. I think I would still take the Jets with the points just because I don't think that, you know, Williams will be ready to go right away. I think he might struggle early in the season, but I do agree that that number is going up.
Yeah, I will just say this again. If you like the Niners here, grab it this morning. If you like the Jets, you might be able to wait here as the week continues, then by the same theory. Zach, appreciate it as always, man. Thank you so much, and congratulations again on the Tennis Channel.
Thanks, guys.
Zach Cohen, everybody, at Betting on X. Zach's official title here, writer and senior editor, but he is multimedia at this point. We love that for him. We'll come back. The Microwave Instant Offense from John Legueza on baseball. On the other side, Numbers Game, Visa, the Sports Betting Network.
A Numbers Game on Visa, the Sports Betting Network.
Back on A Numbers Game, live from Circa. Here in downtown Las Vegas, Gil Alexander, Kelly Bidlon. That's BYDLON for those scoring at home.
That's right.
Yeah, we got some tweets about you and FSU coming up. We'll read tweets later.
Was a little fired up that first segment?
You were a bit.
just a little fired up?
You're a bit fired up. And now, 3 minutes of hell with Kelly Billet. That's what we should do every day. This gentleman is, we like to call him the microwave Vinny Johnson. He's instant offense. You can follow him on Twitter at John Legeza. That's LAGHEZZA. Writes for The Athletic, both baseball and football, by the way, for The Athletic. And also has multiple sports that he does at the Fantasy Life, which he focuses on as well. Comes to us courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line. It's John Legeza, everybody. How you doing, Johnny?
Yo, thank you so much. I'll tell you what, if you guys do end up including a mean tweet segment, you got to include me.
What do you mean? That you receive mean tweets?
You know what? I think I could play either side of that tennis net.
So you're taking shots as well, John? Is that what you're saying?
Well, I mean, hold on. We were talking about Kelly. I know I got at least one in the chamber with his name on it. But I also, you know, I'm out there stirring up the pot at MLB and NFL constantly. So I know, you know, my show's got a couple holes in it too.
Yeah, learned something about Johnny today. John, I know you want to go to you want to talk football prop. Are you playing any baseball today at all first of all?
Yeah. Well, let's do the baseball one first. I've actually been whispering it because I don't know, maybe the books have their, you know, that hairy eyeball on NFL and forgetting about, you know, lonely old MLB. So let's start it up. We got the Pirates and Pauly Skeens on the mound against the Cubs and what was supposed to be Justin Steele, who's very good. You know, he's a really tough lefty. And that, you would think, would have been the 125 to the Pirates side. Steele popped up with an elbow injury. This is yesterday. It's not even breaking news. They're replacing him with Kyle Hendricks, who's plus 105. So as much as I like smashing the Skeens stuff, the team total was just too low for me. The Pirate full game team total, Gil, is at 3.5. Kyle Hendricks with a 6.75 ERA. Last I checked, that's not any good. 1.5 whip, 840 OPS. You just go down the road. We're now down to 88 miles an hour. You know, there's not much left to go beyond that. Single digit swing and strike, 19 whiff. There's really nothing in the profile that you like. Plus two homer nine, 365 xWOBA, and it just goes on and on. I mean, he's constantly getting crushed. He's been terrible at home. 5.3 ERA, almost two homer nine. Again, it just goes on and on and on. Pirates offense, you know, good, but not great. They've been okay. A couple sticks in that lineup, enough to get you there. And if we don't get it early somehow, it's not even like the Cubs bullpen has been any good. They're at a 5.5 ERA last 42.5 innings, 1.5 whip, 12% walk. Those are all the things that'll get you in trouble. So give me the Pirates to score 4 today, full game against the Cubs and Kyle Hendricks.
Let me ask you a couple follow-ups. I know you're not a big awards guy. But if you had a vote, if John Legeza had a National League Rookie of the Year vote right now, would you be a Skeens guy or a Merrill guy?
Oh, man. I think for me it's Merrill because I think you get the impact every day. He's also been doing it for longer. And it's not to take anything away from Paul Skeens. He'd be a, you know, Rookie of the Year in another 2 months or maybe 8 of the next 10 years. But what Merrill has done, and especially if you're looking at the late game stuff, he's single. How many games has he walked off now? 4 or 5? It's absurd. You know, it really hits a point where I know clutch is not sticky, but then some guys kind of transcend where you want them in the moment. You go tell David Ortiz he's not clutch. You go tell Barry Bonds he's not clutch. Now, not to say he's up there with those hitters, but with guys that really put the fear of God into pitchers. And right now, Merrill is one of those guys. I'm giving it to Merrill for turning around the Padres, helping turn around a team that people were not expecting a ton from. So I think just total impact, I'd go with the, you know, the greater sample probably.
But here's how I know, getting back to our original comments on this, here's how I know that it's going to be closer than the betting line suggests. I think Jackson Merrill does get home, but it'll be closer because the first thing that came out of Legace's mouth was, oh, boy.
Slight hesitation.
Well, that's what I mean. Just that I think that will reflect what a lot of these voters will do. They'll be like, oh,
this guy's
boy.
Girlfriend says it all, man. You know, come on.
It's a factor, John. We've been trying to tell people.
Sometimes I call it frog DNA, right? We've got the Jurassic Park analogy. We only have so many data points, and sometimes we have to bridge the gap, right? So you use frog DNA to make the rest of the dinosaur. And listen, when it comes down to splitting hairs, show me the guy's girlfriend, you know?
Not the first person to come up with that tiebreaker. By the way, agreeing with everything you say about today's game between the Pirates and the Cubs, Kyle Hendricks has always had this issue where he's throwing 88 miles per hour. I mean, if he threw 90, it was just a great day. So, I mean, kudos to him for having as long a career as he's had, because he's been able to sort of finesse that with such a thin margin of error with that kind of pitching profile. That said, about the Cubs beyond today, we have a bet here, the Braves to miss the playoffs. We have an 8-1 in a VSiN contest. I have it 7.5-1 in real life. The Mets are now within a half game of the Braves for that final position in the National League wild card. But the Cubs are 3.5 back. And I'm curious, would you take a flyer on a team like the Cubs to make the playoffs?
I'll tell you what, not today, you know, because Steele would have to be a big part of that. You know, he's getting the ball every 5 days. And again, you know, us bettors have a unique look at MLB because we think about it in a granular level like that. He's a favorite every time he goes out. He can go 7 full shutout. He has playoff vibes to him. They need him. Without him, you replace him with Kyle Hendricks, and it's going to be a lot harder to make up those games.
All right, man.
As far as the Braves go, if we're talking about that kind of replacement, we just saw what Grant Holmes could do in the starting rotation. The Braves somehow keep finding the hitting, and the pitching has been there. I think I like the Braves slightly greater than signing the Mets right now for the pitching depth. Peterson's a great example. I just think negative regression is coming. All the indicators are screaming for it. He's pitching above his skis. Same for like Quintana. I'm just not buying the Mets staff down the stretch.
Yeah. What you're saying about the Cubs is interesting. And so that immediately then with those of us who have this Braves to miss the playoffs bet, it's like, oh, great. I got to rely on the Mets is what you're saying. Wonderful.
Yeah. Mets and Cubs.
Well, probably help you out if history says anything. Yeah.
All right. Football season long. Obviously there are team bets, you know, ad nauseum, and it's fantastic to have these available to us, but there's player props as well that are season long. And you have landed on one that you really love, a long shot play.
Oh, I absolutely love this one. It's a most receiving touchdowns in the league, right? To lead the league in touchdowns. It's DK Metcalf. We're going off at 30-1. So right off the bat, you know, lip licking odds right there. But I think people tend to chase scoring in the wrong way when it comes to NFL, right? So scoring is not sticky. You see the odds reflected in the market weekly. The one thing that we do want is opportunity. The second thing we do want is that physical nature, right? So DK Metcalf, obviously the second part, he is an absolute freak. He could win in tight spaces. He could win one-on-one. He could win in the end zone. He does just that. He can also score from far away, which is going to help you if you're going to try and do something like lead the league. Now, what the thing that I wanted to circle back to is the opportunities that I mentioned. Again, opportunity is not necessarily sticky, but when you don't break continuity in the NFL, something that I weigh very much, something I've heard you talk about also, Gil, when I listened to your show, quarterback continuity with the offense, specifically with wide receivers, repetitions, the anticipation, and stuff that goes along with it. We've seen Geno be good. He's a viable NFL quarterback. DK is a legit 1A. Now, check it out in terms of opportunities. We're going to go back 2 years, so 2022, 2023. Who led the league in end zone targets? The answer, Mike Evans, 31. Oh, wait, I forgot to scroll all the way up. It's actually DK Metcalf with 42. He has a 35% lead on the field as far as end zone targets. You're right. These are not even red zone targets where it could be at the 20 and the ball's at the 11. This is in the end zone. 42 targets in the last 2 years, and he's still in his prime. If that variance pendulum just swings back in the other direction, we have an easy smash here at 30-1. He should not be 30-1. He could score from out far, and he's the target when they get close. Plus, Ken Walker's had some issues with the lateral movement, with the happy feet, not being able to get the short yard situations. Anybody following Seattle knows that. So if he doesn't get it on first, they could be throwing second and third. So give me Metcalf to lead the league in receiving touchdowns. 30-1. Let's go.
It's interesting. I had the instinct to be skeptical about this, but you bring up end zone targets. For those who are wondering, John, we know how to find targets. That's pretty widespread, and fantasy players love seeing targets. Where would one find end zone targets?
I would go to fantasylife.com and sign up to my betting newsletter where I'm doing the work so you don't have to. One of the great things that they do is we're making it a very easy read, and I'm using charts instead of my motor mouth. So it's just a line, and then you see a chart, and I'm visualizing all this stuff. We use True Media, hat tip to them. You know, you have to be a little bit of a whiz back there, you know, but I do the hard work so you don't have to. Check out the newsletter. Again, it's free. And if it's free, it's for me. And we lay out all the visuals. A lot of fun. But man, I love that DK bat. I mean, talk about separation. Let's go.
Man, did I set you up for that promo. I promise that was not planned, people.
They call that a segue in the business, you know?
I really didn't plan that. John, always a pleasure. Thank you, man.
Oh, I love you guys.
John Legesa, love you back. We'll come back. More Survivor talk right here on A Numbers Game.